It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, welcome. Sorry about yesterday. As I mentioned in comm, I got about 30 text messages from frantic users at work probably about 30 minutes before showtime with an urgent issue. Basically, the short is that I devised this system that would handle remote execution of certain applications for users, and I upgraded one of the intermediary servers, and so it was using a new version of some software and was incompatible with the downstream. So basically broke everything, and I was in the impression that everyone was off this week, but no, they were not. So that was why it was an emergency, because Lord knows. Anyway, I work for a large multinational corporation, and so there are offices all over the world. And guess what? People in the UK are not, or Ireland even, are not that understanding that, oh, it's Thanksgiving, that's why they're not going to get paid or whatever. It's like, oh, yeah, I guess that matters. So anyway, that's my excuse. But anyway, I'm sorry for missing the show. We'll go ahead and pick it on up. And of course, what we always do when we start, is we start with our world, or blended, our world news.
World news.
Hey, Ratsu, thanks for joining in. Oh, first up, coming to us from Belarus, since we've talked about this a few times, Russia is now telling Belarus leader to press ahead with constitutional reform. Russia's foreign minister told Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko on Thursday to honor agreements with the Kremlin and press ahead with constitutional reforms to defuse a political crisis after months of protests. The photo accompanying with the article shows Lukashenko sitting on a couch with his hands interlaced with each other, but he looks like a man who's being scolded or talked down to, and he's not happy about it. Very grumpy face. Lukashenko, who faces calls to step down following an August 9th presidential election which protesters say was rigged, promised during talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin on September 14th that he would reform Belarus's constitution. Lukashenko has denied electoral fraud and secured a lifeline $1.5 billion loan from Moscow, whose political support is vital for him to stay in power. He later said Belarus could hold new elections once the constitutional reforms had been adopted. So, we'll see what happens there. Hello, X1! Welcome! Welcome! This show is traditionally, typically live, and when it is live, like today on November 26th, 2020, hello from the past if you're listening to a repeat. But usually, this is live, and you can talk to people while the show's going on in COM, which is SDF's special chat program, just SSH over to SDF. If you're cool, tty.sdf.org, and then type com, press and enter, C-O-M, hit enter, G for go to, and then type non-radio, all one word, hit enter, and you'll be in the room with everyone. Press H for help if you have trouble. All right, well, let's keep on going. This is coming to us from The Guardian, and Jordan is scrambling to affirm its custodianship of Al-Aqsa Mosque. Amman fears warming Israel-Saudi relations may threaten its hold on a holy Islamic site. Jordan is scrambling to affirm its custodianship in Jerusalem after a meeting between Israel and Saudi leaders raised fears in Amman that the fate of one of Islam's holiest sites could be up for grabs in a normalization deal between the two countries. Warming relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel, capped by a weekend visit by Benjamin Netanyahu to the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, have alarmed Jordanian leaders, who already unnerved by Riyadh's regional posturing. The fear Al-Aqsa could be in play as the Trump administration tries to secure a regional legacy in its dying weeks. Without apparent prompting, the Jordanian Foreign Ministry released a statement on Wednesday night challenging attempts to alter the historical and legal status quo of the mosque. A spokesman, Daifala Al-Fayez, said the kingdom will continue its effort to protect and care for the mosque and preserve the rights of all Muslims to it in compliance with the Hashemite custodianship of Jerusalem's Muslim and Christian holy sites. So, that... yeah. So that's what's going on over there. So we should see what happens here. They are reporting that the statement followed a call between the U.S. President-elect Joe Biden and Jordan's King Abdullah II, a member of the Hashemite dynasty, which has governed the Jerusalem sites, known as Haram al-Sharif, since 1924, the same year the Saud dynasty was given control of Mecca and Medina. So, yeah. So, there are several religious states over there, and so they all have varying controls of different holy spaces, or religious spaces. Okay. Sorry, I haven't taken my allergy pill yet today, and so I'm a little stuffy. On the bright side, it is only 45% humidity today, which is great. Feels much better. Alright, going down to Africa, Reuters is reporting, or Reuters, we'll say Reuters, that's what Publius said. South Africa's lower house of parliament will vote on a motion of no confidence in President Cyril Ramaphosa next week. The parliament said on Thursday, but the motion has little chance of succeeding. Oh man, he has a great mask. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is pictured in this story, and he has a bright green and red mask with an interesting pattern on it. I like it a lot. Alright, the vote was requested by a small opposition party, the African Transformation Movement, ATM, which has only 2 seats in the 400-member National Assembly. The parliament said in a statement that the vote would happen on Thursday, December 3rd, by open ballot. Secret ballots can be held when the political atmosphere is deemed toxic. The ATM's leader did not respond to a Reuters request for comment about why his party wanted the no-confidence vote. So, we shall see what's happening there. According to the Constitution, a motion of no confidence in the president needs to be supported by a simple majority in the National Assembly to pass. The largest opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, said it did not support the ATM motion. The Economic Freedom Fighters, the second largest opposition group, said it would respond later. So we'll see what happens there, but it appears it's like if only two people are calling for it. It doesn't sound like out of 400, doesn't sound like that's very plausible, but it was some news coming out of South Africa, and I'm trying to keep my eye on Africa and Asian news because, golly, I do not see enough of it in my typical news collection during the day. Go down over here to Iran. Australian scholar Kylie Moore Gilbert has been freed after 2 years in an Iranian jail. France 24 is reporting this. An Australian-British lecturer jailed for spying by Iran has been released after 2 traumatic years, part of a swap for 3 Iranian prisoners reportedly linked to a botched Bangkok bomb plot. Middle East scholar Kylie Moore Gilbert said leaving Iran was bittersweet, despite the injustices she had endured during more than 800 days detained in some of Iran's toughest prisons. I came to Iran as a friend and with friendly intentions, she said, praising the warm-hearted, generous, and brave Iranian people. After what she called a long and traumatic ordeal, the University of Melbourne Islamic Studies lecturer said she faced a challenging period of adjustment at home in Australia. The 33-year-old was arrested by Iran's hardline Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps in 2018 after attending an academic conference in the holy city of Qom, Q-O-M, not sure how you say that, in central Iran. She was later charged with espionage and sentenced to 10 years in jail. So, this is very sad, but glad she's free. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison would only say that Australia had not released any prisoners. He added that he'd spoken to Moore Gilbert and confirmed she would receive health and psychological support on her return. So, we shall see how that plays out, but it's always good when political prisoners are freed. Going back to Africa for a little bit, Nigerian court hears blasphemy conviction appeals in northern city Kano. 2 judges in northern Nigeria on Thursday heard the first appeals against Islamic law blasphemy convictions that caused global outrage when a man was sentenced to death over a WhatsApp message and a 13-year-old received a 10-year jail term. The judges at the appeals section of the secular high court in the city of Kano said verdicts would be delivered at a later date. In August, a Kano Sharia court sentenced Yahya Amino Sharif. Put that in calm since I'm probably saying it wrong. To death for allegedly sharing a blasphemous message on WhatsApp, and Omar Farouk, accused of making blasphemous comments in an argument, received a prison sentence. The convictions were condemned by rights groups, the UN, and the head of Poland's Auschwitz Memorial, who said he and others would volunteer to each serve a month of the boys' prison sentence. They also sparked a debate about Sharia's compatibility with Nigeria's secular constitution. Nigeria is roughly evenly split between a predominantly Muslim north and mainly Christian south. Sharia, or Islamic religious law, is applied in 12 of Nigeria's 36 states, where Sharia courts operate alongside secular ones. Charges prompted anger in Kano, the north's commercial hub, and protesters burned down Sharif's family home in March. Where any law conflicts with the Constitution, that law must bow to the Constitution, is Kola Apollonini, a defense lawyer representing the defendants, said that convictions were incompatible with the Constitution, which gives people rights to have freedom of expression. Where any law conflicts with the Constitution, that law must bow down to the Constitution, he told Reuters. Both sides can take their case to the Federal Court of Appeal if they're unhappy with the State Appeal Court's ruling. So we shall see. Yeah, so this is news to me because I didn't realize Nigeria had a bit of Islamic population. So finding out that the whole north of the country was, and they had Sharia courts and everything, was really interesting. Turkey, again with more court news. Turkey courts jails hundreds for life for the 2016 coup plot against Erdogan. That's right. You might remember, this was a few years ago, but there was a big, we're going to take a coup attempt. And so a bunch of people were arrested, and it was like, oh, there's no way they'll charge them all. Well, they sure did. A court in Turkey has given life sentences to 337 military officers and others in one of the biggest trials linked to the 2016 coup attempt. Air Force pilots and army commanders were among the nearly 500 defendants accused of trying to overthrow President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. I always say his name wrong. I don't know why I have trouble with it. But there it is. Aww. Come on. There we go. Yeah. I'm learning. So, Mr. Gulen has been denied any involvement in the attempted coup in July 2016 that killed 251 people and injured more than 2,000. Mr. Erdogan was on vacation at the time at a resort. Thousands of civilians rallied in support in a night of turmoil, confronting rogue soldiers and preventing plotters from seizing power. Trial began in August 2017, and the charges included seeking to kill the president and seize key state institutions. Turkey's biggest court in Sincan, near Ankara, was packed for the verdicts. So this is a pretty big deal here. Afterwards, Mr. Erdogan carried out a sweeping purge of state institutions, sacking or suspending more than 100,000 public sector employees, including teachers and judges, who were accused of links to Mr. Gulen. There have been many trials of alleged plotters, and courts have issued more than 2,500 life sentences. So, this is pretty wild stuff. I don't know. I'm not sure what the sentence is in the U.S., but I thought in the U.S. we either killed you or you only got like a short sentence, not life. So it's kind of, anyway, that's why it was neat to me. It was like, wow, thousands of people with life sentences all at once. That doesn't seem like a good day. That's got to suck. So I don't know. There's some analysis to be done there. But, I mean, what are you going to do? Oh, you know what? I've just noticed the time. It is about 15 minutes to go until the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe, because that show is every day. Every day! If it's a day on the calendar, there is a Dubious Goals Committee meeting. So be sure you tune in and attend that. Attendance is not taken, and explanations are rarely given. But you will get lots of golf ball news and ball joint doll news, BJD news. So, all right, let's do 2, 3. Dang, All right, we're just going to do these real quick because we're running out of time. We got lots of stories to talk about. Tens of millions of workers to join All India General Strike. Tens of millions of workers across India will join a one-day general strike today to protest the pro-investor policies of the Narendra Modi-led Bharatiya Janata Party, BJP. And I'm going to put that in here because I know I said it poorly. Bharatiya Janata Party. Government. Austerity, privatization, the promotion of fire-at-will contract, labor jobs, and the gutting of health and safety, all other regulatory restraint on capitalist exploitation. The strike is also being fueled by mass anger over the government's ruinous handling of COVID-19 pandemic. Like governments around the world, Modi and his BJP have prioritized corporate profit and safeguarding the fortune of India's billionaires and multimillionaire families over protecting workers' lives and livelihoods. This has produced a health and socioeconomic catastrophe. Officials' figures show India with more than 9.2 million COVID-19 infections, the world's second highest tally, and almost 135,000 deaths. Amazon workers in Germany are going on strike on Black Friday, which is tomorrow. Trade union Verdi called on workers at 7 German Amazon warehouses to go on a 3-day strike that will coincide with Black Friday discount shopping sales on November 27th. Scheduled to begin with Wednesday's night shift, Verdi is demanding better pay and working conditions. Verdi has been organizing strikes at Amazon in Germany, the company's biggest market after the U.S., since 2013, most recently last month during its Prime Day promotional event. An Amazon spokesman said at the time that the company offered excellent salaries with benefits and working conditions comparable with other important employers. The U.S. retail giant has seen sales soar globally as restrictions to prevent the spread of the coronavirus sent consumers online, making it difficult for some brick-and-mortar shops to compete. Verdi argues this has strengthened the case for higher wages, adding workers were not sufficiently protected against the spread of the virus. Last week, Amazon bowed to government pressure in France to postpone its local Black Friday event by a week to help local shopkeepers struggling. And we talked about that a couple days ago. Xi Jinping calls to congratulate Joe Biden finally. Chinese president told future counterpart he hoped two countries could uphold spirit of no conflict focus on cooperation. Yeah, it's definitely scary times in India. It's like it's a large democracy, but the economy trying to balance out workers' rights along with capitalist demands and all that kind of stuff is a very difficult task. Combine that with the large size of the country, it's a big complex piece. It's definitely very interesting. And one last international story. England adds Estonia and Latvia to quarantine list and lifts the travel ban on Denmark. England added Estonia and Latvia to its traveler quarantine list, meaning that from November 28th, people arriving from those countries are required to isolate for 14 days. The Transport Secretary, Grant Shapps, also said that a total travel ban on Denmark announced on November 7th in response to concerns over outbreaks in the mink farms would be lifted on November 28th. However, Denmark will remain on the quarantine list. So we'll see what happens there. As Brexit nears and there's no deal, I think that travel bans are going to be the least of the UK's worries soon. All right. Well, it's time for a musical break. I like to play a song because sometimes, you know, this gets a little heavy, and so it's always good to kind of play a little bit of music and not get too worked up about the news. Here's the little noise guy.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
I know some of you guys love that guy. So we're going to play a song. This is called Can't Afford No Shoes. It's by the Mothers of Invention, which is with Frank Zappa and crew. And I thought it fit because, really, There's a lot of people that can't afford no shoes right now.
Some
here.
You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. Thank you, SDF, for powering Anon Radio. And if you're tuning in, you're at the tail end of the show. This is news to me, hosted by me. It's a Monday through Friday show, every day at 1900 UTC, followed at 1930 UTC, every day, Monday through Monday, with the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. So stick around, tune in, it'll be a good time. We're going to go ahead and finish up with some headlines and go through some stories. So let's get going. And welcome, Joe Locoza, to comp. And shout outs to X1 and Tobe and Ransu. Thanks for chatting it up in comp. So first, a kind of a football story. I don't have a tone for it, but football. Argentina is mourning a flawed hero, Maradona, as family seeks quick burial. This comes from Reuters, but this is world news. It's all over the place. Argentines lined up in the streets of Buenos Aires on Thursday to say goodbye to soccer great Diego Maradona, whose casket lay in state at the Casa Rosada presidential palace, draped in an Argentine flag and his famous number 10 shirt. Maradona, whose life was marred by struggles with addiction, died aged 60 following a heart attack at home on Wednesday. 3 days of national mourning were called for the player who led Argentina to a 1986 World Cup win and is revered with cult-like status. The star's family is hoping to hold the burial on Thursday evening at the Bella Vista Cemetery on the outskirts of Buenos Aires, where his parents are also interred, a government source said. Cemetery source confirmed that the burial had been scheduled from 6 p.m. local time, but said it could also be delayed to Friday morning. Early on Thursday, thousands of fans had already formed a snaking line through the streets near the Central Plaza after a night of mourning and reminiscing. Some scuffles broke out as some tried to get inside the palace to see their hero's casket. And so then they have some quotes. But Maradona's body lay in a wooden coffin with a blue and white national flag and an Argentinian soccer jersey with the number 10, that is part of his nickname, D10S. Or I guess it's D10S. I just got... What happened there? I never get messages. And now, lots of people are sending me messages. I'm guessing because it's Thanksgiving and they're not with their family. They're like, oh, I guess I'll message my friend I don't talk to. Anyway, wow, there's a lot of fan art and some photos of just the really big lines, so pretty wild. And so, while I don't normally cover sports, it is a big loss to a lot of people, so that made kind of some news. It's kind of neat how sports kind of gets into people's lives. And one tech story for you, Microsoft Productivity Score feature has been criticized as workplace surveillance. So the tool allows managers to use Microsoft's 365 to track their employees' activity. Microsoft's been criticized for enabling workplace surveillance after privacy campaigners warned that the company's productivity score feature allowed managers to use Microsoft 365 to track their employees' activity at an individual level. The tool, first released in 2019, or the tools, are designed to provide you visibility into how your organization works, according to a Microsoft blog post, and aggregate information about everything from email use to network connectivity into a headline percentage for office productivity. But by default, reports also let the managers drill down into a data on individual employees to find who participates less in group chat conversation, sends fewer emails, or fail to collaborate in shared documents. This is so problematic at many levels, tweeted an Australian researcher. Managers evaluating individual level employee data is a no-go. Any evaluation of group productivity can also shift power from employees to organizations. Employee self-control via My Analytics. Oh, yeah, these are just tweets. In a statement, a Microsoft spokesman said, Productivity Score is an opt-in experience that gives IT administrators insights about technology and infrastructure usage. Insights are intended to help organizations make the most of their technology investments by addressing common pain points like long boot times, inefficient document collaboration, or poor network connectivity. Insights are shown in aggregate over a 28-day period and are provided at the user level so an IT admin can provide technical support and guidance. So, basically, employee surveillance has really ramped up alongside remote working during the coronavirus pandemic as companies seek more oversight of workers away from the office. So yeah, that's what's going on. Yeah. So, yeah, basically, nanny software, or bossware, as it's getting to be called, of course, the people who make it are very much sure that assure you that it's only for productivity. We promise you're not going to get killed, or you're not going to get yelled at by your boss because of this or that, but come on, get with it. All right, just a couple minutes to go, so let's throw out some headlines. One, Rewire News Group, which I don't cover a lot, but they want to be sure and let you know that saying pregnant people isn't just inclusive, it's correct. And the story goes on about abortion politics must be inclusive of trans and non-binary people. And so just saying pregnant people instead of pregnant women, because, you know, you may have a trans man or just a man or someone that doesn't identify as a woman, who's anybody that has a uterus really could get pregnant. So that's important. The U.S. Supreme Court has backed religious groups over New York virus curbs. One of the things that's very scary about Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court is this imbalance of very religious people on the court. And so the U.S. Supreme Court late on Wednesday sided with Christian and Jewish houses of worship in their challenge of New York State coronavirus restrictions that limited gatherings in religious institutions. The court has a 6-3 conservative majority, voted 5-4 in favor of requests by the Roman Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn and two Orthodox Jewish congregations for an injunction to block the restrictions being enforced. So, Donald Trump, of course, is very happy about this and gloating, although he's on his way out. That's not really news. Denver mayor apologizes after flying for Thanksgiving against his own advice. And something that, oh, congratulations, Tobe. Tomorrow is the 1,900th episode of DGC. We've only got a couple of seconds to go, but I did want to just mention Denver mayor apologizes after flying for Thanksgiving against his own advice. And basically, any world leader, anybody in power, they're all saying stay home, but then they go and do the opposite. Because fuck those guys.
Well,
they're a bunch of fucking dirty politicians.
Our time's come to an end.
Anyway, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
Brontifier. I'm excited about that. The Brontifier will be at the DGC tomorrow. See you then.